Hello.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Your Time Starts Now, a Taskmaster podcast. Sorry we're 1 week late again. One day.
I have to work. Unlike some of us, I am an adult with a job.
Yeah, but I'm at uni. I don't really have a lot of excuses right now, but I quit my job. I've finished my dissertation. I handed it in yesterday. That doesn't mean I'm completely done with university stuff. I've still got a couple of bits and pieces left to do. But yeah, I'm Emerson.
And I am not.
What is new in your life, not Emerson?
Nothing. Nothing particularly. I am, we're expanding at work. So I've been working like all week. And I will be working for like the next month.
Okay. Quite late, I assume?
It's full days. Yeah, it's you know, come in early and sometimes you got to leave late and, you know, it's, you know, and it's fine. It's fine. Can't complain.
That sort of thing happens. I've got big news.
Yes.
I got a tattoo.
Of?
A scorpion.
Okay. I believe you... Oh, that's right. You did use this same thing. For reference, Emerson just messaged me and said, I've got a surprise for you. And he did that the last time when he got when you got your ears pierced. But it's... you know, it's like... When I say, I've got a surprise for you, it's like... Someone has died, or I'm moving, or something like that. Or and Emerson... And so it's like different levels of expectations.
I put it in our Discord chat. Can you see it?
If I have Discord open, that would help. No, it has not come through.
There we go. It should come through now.
It's a very detailed scorpion.
Indeed. It's pretty big as well. It's like, it's not my whole upper forearm. It's about 75% of it.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, it's a cool one. I'm really happy with it. A lovely woman called Lily at Headcase Inc. Winchester did it.
Why a scorpion? Shout out.
Why a scorpion?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a Scorpio for one thing.
Okay.
They're cool creatures. I relate a lot to the animal. And also my pole dancing team recently named themselves the Scorpions. So there's multiple meanings to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've
wanted a scorpion tattoo for ages anyway. Either the image of the tattoo will be the image, the thumbnail for this, or another later.
I have a good moment in the episode for a thumbnail.
We might have the same one, but if we're both thinking of the same one, we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's new. It was pretty painful. Well, I wasn't screaming out loud or anything. And in fact, I was quite well behaved. No screaming. Yeah, it was took about 2 hours. I really like it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So now I've got my ears pierced and I have a tattoo.
You're slowly filling your body with holes.
In other words, you could say I'm pretty punk.
Nothing about you is punk, Emerson.
At least I'm more punk than the man who describes himself as punk on this TV show we call Taskmaster.
I'm sure that Alex Horn could be punk, but Alex Horn, I think...
Oh, no, we're talking about James A. Caster.
Oh,
he's described himself as punk numerous times.
Yeah, he's probably, like, punk in... And, like, he's probably punk for Eton University.
That's funny.
Good lord, the Acaster bloke has done something stupid again. How undeniably punk of him.
Okay,
So, now we're going to go into the episode. This is episode 8 of season 7, Mother Honks Her Horn.
We've got 3 episodes left, including this one.
And it aired on October 24th, 2018.
Oh, I've got a couple of little bits of Taskmaster-related news, if we can
quickly. Ah, yes.
Taskmaster Australia, which we're probably not going to get to for several years, at least, has been commissioned for a second series.
Yeah.
So, yay.
I heard about that.
And Taskmaster UK is going to be, the first six series of that is going to be coming to UK Netflix in early May.
Ah. So, that'll make it even easier to watch.
Yeah, although it's pretty easy to watch already in the UK, and even in America, it's pretty easy to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But that's neither here nor there.
Yep.
Shall we talk Taskmaster Series 7, Episode 8, Mother Honks Her Horn? And a lot goes on in this episode.
There is quite a lot. So we're going to go into... So, yeah. So
do you want to do the prize task, or should I?
Did I do it last time?
You probably did.
Then that's you. But before we do that, so we have the we have our banter at the beginning.
Hawaiian shirt.
Well, Alex is being punished for something that he did last episode, according to Greg, in the opening banter. And so Alex...
But I can't exactly remember what that was.
Was it his
ear stretches or something?
I assume it's the ear gauges that Greg is sort of like running that over, but the punishment is yet to be seen. It will be shown later on, and then we go... And so that's just something to mention for that. And then going on into the Hawaiian shirt count...
Hawaiian shirt!
This is like a maybe for right now, because...
Shall I make it a bit distorted again?
Yeah, because so everybody except Rod is dressed fantastic, because we've got... James is wearing a shirt that I would just wear in public, out and around. It's like vertically striped with a variety of bright colors on it.
I don't know what made me think this, but I thought you were going to say his shirt is vertically challenged.
That's just a crop top. But, but
that could be an interesting... That's just a crop top is an interesting episode title.
That's actually really good. Jess Snappet is wearing, like, some fringy top thing. It's, like, completely made out of I don't know if fringe is the right word, but it's all just different little strips of material that's like over her shirt. So I'm not that might just be a crop top, but it's it's clearly like intended as a jacket. Carrie's the closest to an actual floral print shirt. She's wearing this like thin, borderline see-through white lacy shirt that's got like little flowers in the fabric. That's got like little flower patterns in the fabric in various areas.
But just like these sort of Hawaiian shirts, but also sort of not.
Yeah. Well, Phil Wang is probably the closest spiritually to a Hawaiian shirt, which is he has a shirt that is completely like white or like maybe dark white, like tan ish. You know what I mean? When like it's a dark white fabric. But his also has a band of American flags going around the roughly like, I don't want to be weird about it, roughly nipple height across the chest, which is like...
You think saying roughly nipple height is weird for this podcast?
I don't want to make it... With Phil Wang, any mention of body parts is a little weird because of
As if we haven't seen enough of Phil already.
We've seen all of
Phil.
We
see a lot more of him today. This episode.
But so it's a band of American flags. These are shirts that people would wear in America, and I would wear this one too. And it's a button up with like the little pop rivet buttons instead of just normal buttons, which is going to be important later.
It's like poppers.
Yeah,
sometimes we call them.
But that's the closest spiritually to a Hawaiian shirt. And then Alex also has some stuff on, although that will be revealed later on in the episode. So I will. We will get to that when that comes up. But keep that in mind. And then Rod Gilbert's just wearing like a black t-shirt, a black dress shirt, and black pants. So nothing there.
Nothing. The prize task in honor of Little Alex Horn. It is the creepiest thing. So, James Acaster, being a small town boy from Kettering, has brought in a mummified cat from the Manor House Museum in Kettering.
I'm very surprised that he brought this in, because that implies that he was allowed to bring in this museum piece. Like, the museum willingly deaccessioned the mummified cat. Oh, actually, as I'm saying this, I went to the end of the episode to look at it, and I proved myself wrong, because it's just a photograph of the mummified cat. It is not actually the Kettering Museum mummified cat. Because I'm thinking to myself, no museum would let, presumably Kettering is a small town. I don't know anything about Kettering. Doesn't matter.
I'll Google Kettering's population real quick.
But presumably the town museum would have this as like a star exhibit or something. So they're not going to like deaccession it. And if they are, they're not going to deaccession
it. In 2018, the population of Kettering was 101,266.
Okay, so a medium-sized city. Kettering's not going to deaccession a fucking mummified cat to James Acaster, of all people. So it's just a picture of a creepy mummified cat, which I feel would have knocked down the point values a little more. I might have to reconsider where I scored him.
That's honestly fair enough. It didn't say whether the cat was James said that the cat was sort of built into the walls, but he remembers that they didn't specify whether the cat was alive or dead when it was built into the walls.
Yeah, because it's supposedly good luck to keep cats in your walls, presumably based out of like, you know, this is how you keep mice out, but you know, you know, did not specify whether it had to be alive or dead.
We've talked about weird pickup lines on the podcast before.
Yeah,
right,
we've mentioned them. I don't remember when.
Well, I'm sure we have. Spelvin, because you probably know more about this podcast than we do ourselves, can you confirm whether or not we have discussed pickup lines? Anyway, I mentioned pickup lines because Kerry Godleyman, who is up next, has brought in a t-shirt saying, "I'm not a gynecologist, but I'll have a damn good look for you."
Yeah, which, this was apparently
worn by a man on the tube maintained eye contact with her for four stops.
Yeah, that is one of those shirts that is universally regarded as a bad thing to wear, but due to the proliferation of online printing services for these shirts will never go away. It's sort of like herpes.
Wow.
Look, I've publicly stated my disdain for print-on-demand shirts, but also, you know, that's what it is. You know, once you have introduced it to the environment, someone will think it's funny, and so someone will always have one, so it spreads continuously, like a visual herpes.
That is a very interesting comparison that I was not at all expecting. Now, Phil has brought in a finger-painted portrait of himself, given to him by a fan. The picture doesn't look inherently creepy, and Phil sort of tries to amp up the creepiness of it by describing the fact that this fan painted along his contours with a finger in a probably, most likely, sexually caressing way, but it doesn't sway Greg or Alex at all.
I was going to say, this is probably very distressing to the English mindset that Phil Wang has, but not to, like, a normal human being. So,
are you saying that British people are not normal?
No, they're not normal. They're not.
What even is normal anymore?
Well, by number of English-speaking residents concentrated within a single country, America.
That does not make Americans normal.
We are Jess the norm, not... That is the closest we'll ever get.
smug prick. Jess has brought in her collection of Victorian Christmas cards, which, aside from the one with the dead robin on it, have no resemblance to Christmas at all.
Oh, yeah, no, these are great. I love old shit. I adore these weird old things.
They're bizarre, and these probably would have been brought in good to
which
be bringing
I
for
would
the
also
most confusing
like
thing
to
as
add
well,
in
I think.
That Jess has only mentioned, like, three of them, because I have the picture in front of me from the episode. There's a dead robin. There's a frog having either dancing or having sex with a beetle. A dead frog that has been murdered by another frog. And then the other three that she didn't mention, which is a group of arsonist sparrows holding matches in their mouth as they march down the side of the card. just fucking Krampus in German. I'm not entirely certain why Krampus is involved here, but, you know, I guess that's for the bad children, considering the two children in the card look distressed. And then finally, a bouquet of flowers growing out of the ground, except that these flowers have children's heads instead of, you know, normal flowers. And, like, they're little girls' heads, so they're wearing bonnets, and those are, like, the flowers. This is...
God almighty. It's such a weird thing. Joe obviously does better explaining this than me.
The 1800s are fucked up.
But, yeah, it's weird. Rod... has brought in a video of himself sitting in Greg's wardrobe while Greg was asleep.
But I would like to mention
this is
Rod,
probably my favorite prize task of Rod Gilbert. Also, for obviously because it's enough of a differentiation from the norm with Rod.
It's so good,
and you don't like it would be scary enough if sort of like. I was actually expecting there to just be like a picture of Greg in the sexy pose that we've seen before, just sort of hanging in the
that
cupboard as well, and like
that,
a piece of blue
that
tack.
Rod had made for Greg. That would have been fairly creepy enough. This was terrible. But I do have a couple of observations about this, if we have a moment, which is that, first of all, I do like how Greg apparently only owns about a dozen shirts, because as Rod pans the camera around, past all the clothes, you can tell, if you're a keen watcher of Mock the Week and, like, you know, some of his comedy stand-up specials, all of the different checked shirts that Greg has have shown up in other panel shows. Like...
Oh, wow. I know he has this, like, red and white and with hints of blue
and those
episodes
are
of Would I Lie to You.
He pans over that one. It's there. Greg just wears that. And then, you know, the other thing that I'm interested in is that I've seen this task before, because there are various Taskmaster compilations of, like, I think it's, like, the best prize tasks or, like, just a Rod Gilbert-specific one. And this is... significantly longer in that compilation, because Rod actually brings in like a video tape, like a VCR tape for this as like a visual representation of the prize, even though it was obviously filmed on like an iPhone. And so
I assume the winner just gets to like keep the footage of that, even though Rod
it's probably like an email or something. Rod actually, there's actually like five more minutes of Rod and Greg discussing this it's on YouTube
somewhere.
It's one of the compilations put out by the Taskmaster channel, and it's like, because like Rod has it's this incredibly long name of the video. I think it's like When You Think You've Seen Everybody Out, Check, or something like that. And then Greg is like, I saw you out. And because like, and they're saying like, this was a party that Greg had a couple of weeks ago, and Rod's like, no, you saw my wife out. And so it's like, they're going back and forth about this. And I'm surprised that they didn't keep that in the episode, because it felt very short, like even shorter than it should have here. Like in this episode, it felt like they were cutting out stuff already. And then if you've gone and watched that one, you know, they cut out a lot from that. I'm very interested, you know, as to why they decided to show more of that in the other compilation.
Okay. So the scores are as follows. Kerry and Rod both get 5. James 4. Jess weirdly gets 2. And Phil 1.
So,
Joseph, do you have any objections? Hang on, before you say yes. Let's drop the jingle then.
It's the Taskmaster and his name is Joe and he's gonna tell us what we should know. It's Taskmaster Joe.
So I'm gonna give Phil last because I can see where he's coming from, but it's not actually creepy.
Fair enough.
Carrie's goes in fourth because the shirt is not distasteful. The shirt is an accoutrement. The shirt is distasteful, but it's only an accoutrement to something creepy going on. Like if there was a picture of the guy wearing it, that would be creepier. I'm going to give Jess second place because I love ye olde bullshit like this. This is hilarious. And then joint first for Rod and James because, you know, a mummified cat is creepy. And then Rod, holy shit. I actually was considering giving Rod 6 points. Like, putting Rod just above everything. But James, you know, now that it's, I know it's not the actual cat, I actually might bump James down to joint second with Jess and keep Rod in first place.
Enough. Okay, so that means we're on to VT Task 1.
Yes, we are. So this is the first task to take place in the Taskmaster Grotto. I have absolutely no idea where this is, and honestly, I'm not...
It wasn't built for Taskmaster.
I don't even know where this is, what this was used for. It's like this elaborately tiled room that just happens to be, like, underground. And there's a hole in the roof. Yes.
Which leads into what the task is.
And which is like 10 feet off the ground. And the task brief is poke something out of the hole in the roof of this grotto. Least expected thing pokes through wins. You have 20 minutes. Your time starts now. So we're going to go through these people in order. To start with, we have James Acaster, who has all the cameras turned off, covers the cameras inside with, like, his jacket. And then when the cameras comes on, he's got his underwear on a stick that he's poking up through the... hole, which... And he sings a little song about it, which brings into the point that in America, those are called underwear, and in the UK, those are called pants.
Now... It was this task that prompted me to get my close brush to fame because I asked if people know my name, that it's because my question was answered in the Enemy podcast in the first episode with James Acaster.
Which what did you ask?
I asked if we could get a full rendition of Pants on a Stick on Spotify. I'll actually play the audio clip of it right here.
Hello, James. My question is, can we get a full rendition of Pants on a Stick on Spotify? That's from Emerson.
Emerson, if you work for a record label, let's talk.
We could drop Pants on a Stick.
I'd love to have it on Spotify.
Are there more verses and choruses that we didn't hear on the show? Do you think now you could give us a little longer rendition? You know, like in the Fresh Prince theme tune where there's a secret verse that you can only hear on the pilot. Is there more Pants on a Stick?
Pants on a stick, waving from side to side. Pants on a stick. Whose pants? My pants. Your pants? No, they're my pants on a stick. They're so clean, I put them in my washing machine. On pants, setting. And they came out and I dried those pants. I dried them on a stick. And I weighed them around until they could fit on my dick.
Thank you, James. That was wonderful. And also, well done on resisting the dick rhyme until right at the end.
Thank you very much. I'm surprised I didn't think of it when I actually did the show.
The audio clip will also include James singing the full song. I don't know if the song is copyrighted or anything. It's probably on the same level.
If it's on,
like
if you get us a copyright strike from that, I'm going to kill you.
Well, maybe I don't know if the song is copyrighted.
Like,
How can we do that?
Make like, a burner is the YouTube song account and try and upload it to YouTube. And if it YouTube flags as a copyright strike, then it's copyrighted.
Well, it's from a podcast, not a video.
Who knows? Maybe the podcast is copyrighted.
If yeah, but that was where I got James to sing an elongated version of the song, which was quite nice. And yeah, that was my closest brush to Taskmaster fame.
Okay. And then so after that we have everybody else's joined. So we've got Carrie and Phil first. Phil strips naked down to his underwear.
Of course. Of course.
Because we need to see literally every inch of Phil Wang.
Phil's Wang.
He tries to put it. They have stuff in the hole in the grotto with them, and what everybody seems to do is just tape a bunch of sticks together. Phil's outfit is apparently so heavy it breaks the stick, so he eventually ends up taping like a bunch of cricket bats together, and he lifts his entire outfit up through the hole. Carrie, meanwhile, had apparently like gone around to scope out where the outside, what was outside of that, and during that she removed her bra without Alex seeing, so Alex was actually surprised when that came through the top. Then at this point, Alex is like offered to go over to Phil for something. God, what did this is in the studio? This is in the studio. Greg tells Alex to go over and, like, I think because he wanted to, like, oh, because that's right. I'm sorry. I forgot this. So Phil, when at the end, Phil, like, needs help zipping up his shirt because, you know, I think this might just be a woman's shirt. And so it's got a zip at the back that he can't get up. So he has Alex do that. And, like, he's mentioning, yeah, I got really up close with Phil. I breathed on his neck. And Greg's like, why don't you go over there and do that again? And Alex takes, like, two steps up, revealing that there's a pair of ropes. A pair of like bungee cords mounted to the back of his suit jacket, and Greg just yanks him back, which is, you know, the bespoke cruelty of this show is sometimes you really have to wonder whose idea this was and how can we stop them? It's like
are extremely unhinged.
These people are very weird, but they are. But anyways,
if you think Phil is weird, then we get Rod.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So my notes
and
for Jess this
together.
My notes for this say as follows for Rod and Jess. Rod finds a ladder and proves that Alex has a humiliation kink. Jess sets the task on fire.
This like task that, is on fire.
That is exactly what happened. So Jess Knappett. These are shown together. I'm just going to talk about them out of order. Jess Knappett pokes the task up. It again tapes the sticks together, tapes the task that lights the task on fire, and then pokes it out of the hole. And nobody, Greg was honestly not expecting fire to come through there. Rod runs around, finds some stuff. He finds a pallet that's outside for some reason. And then finds a extendable stepladder, which, you know, makes you think, ah, he's going to poke himself out through there. No. He has Alex climb down through the hole so that he's like his waist is at the lip of the hole. Has Alex then pull down his pants and underwear. Then, with Alex's bare ass visible to all the cameras, and I'm astounded that we didn't see more of Alex in this clip, or that there would have to be something censored, but then
Alex has Alex has fun pairs of underwear as well.
Yes, that's actually what I was going to get to, but we'll get to that. That's further on down the show, actually, because we don't see Alex's underwear. We just see Alex's lily white ass, as then Rod comes up eye level with Alex's crotch and squirts a bottle of water out from behind Alex's ass through his legs.
Alex's pants were pulled down, so that means that Rob was almost certainly on eye line with Alex's dick.
Yeah, and what's more interesting is that all of this is interesting. An interesting note is that, you know, they actually had to Foley in like a water squirting sound that, you know, because Rod is, I guess, just squeezing a bottle of water and it's like crinkling or something. This whole thing is absolutely wild. Who is Rod Gilbert and why is he like this?
Rod Gilbert is a strange man.
That's pretty much the task. I am convinced that Alex Horn has some form of public humiliation kink, because I don't care about committing to the bit. I don't care.
I'm fairly sure that Alex has paid more money than any of the cast members.
Okay, you have to understand, Emerson, that
people will do anything for money.
This is Dave TV. Dave does not pay enough money for someone to do that unless on some level they're enjoying it.
You make a point. Like, Taskmaster's in the Channel 4 era, so they can pump money into it now.
Either Alex really, really likes committing to the bit, like on an almost like provocateur level of commitment to the bit, or he gets off on this. And I'm not sure which one it is, and I'm not sure which one of those is worse. But we're not going to kink shame on this podcast, except when we do, because some of y'all are nasty. But we're gonna keep on going. And I am not going to drop the Taskmaster Joe theme here, because I make...
Everything's pretty expected.
I pause the task. They pause the episode and then write down my scores, and I actually wrote down the exact same thing that Greg said. And this is wild, because there's a joint, like...
You and Greg never really agree.
Well, no, not only that, but it's like Carrie, Phil, and James get joint points, and the only difference between his and mine is that I gave them joint third and he gave them joint fourth, which I am absolutely shocked that we got the exact same thing.
I just wanted to. Can I say that James Acaster has my quote of the episode in this task?
Oh, which one is it?
He says, I'll probably soundbite it. He says,
expect the unexpected, baby.
Baby.
Ah, okay.
And but, I think I'll probably make that the episode description comment.
Okay. And then, That is this task. This is such a weird one. There, fortunately for you, Emerson, there is no adapted version of this, so we can go straight on to the next one.
Fair enough. Okay, the next task. This is a pretty light episode when it comes to content, I feel.
Yeah, this one I really actually liked this one.
Yeah, me too, but it's great, but there's at the same time, there's not ample amounts to say about it.
Oh, I have plenty of stuff to say, if you want me to, once you get through everything.
I mean, I'll try, but I feel like you always get more into say than me.
Well, no, you do the thing, and then I'll come in with some color commentary for various stuff afterwards. All right,
VT task two. C, your time starts now. Now look in the microwave. R, now look in your pigeonhole. E, now look under the doormat. A, now look in the lab. M, now look in the little blue book. S, at the beginning. Fastest wins. Now, in case you haven't worked out this out yet, the task is to scream. It spells creams, but you put the S at the beginning. So it's a scream. Pretty standard stuff. Yeah.
It should be noted that each one of these individual letters is hidden elsewhere throughout the house.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, there was one thing I wanted to add, because the task is hanging from a birdcage for some reason. I think it was maybe, because usually the way the task is presented to the contestants foreshadows what the task is going to be about, especially in later series. I guess maybe it could, the fact that some contestants struggle to find it could be suggestive of the fact, although it's very difficult to lose your way in this task unless you're Jess Nappet at the very end.
Well, I was actually going to say that Jess Nappet really failed her situational awareness check in this task, because she didn't find the microwave. She did not at first notice the task hanging from the birdcage. She did not notice that it said book and not box. And then I think transferred it to Carrie at one point, because Carrie didn't notice something that I'm sure you'll talk about in a second.
Okay, so let's talk about the people specifically. Let's talk about the ladies first. As Joe said, Jess was doing fine until she misread Little Blue Book as Little Blue Box. And she was just hurrying around, flustered, looking for the box. Finally, she realized her mistake and screamed after 5 minutes and 31 seconds. Carrie struggled to find the Little Blue Book and thought the answer was creams at the beginning. It took her a second, but she got there in 5 minutes and 47 seconds. I was honestly hoping that one of them would scream during the task because of how, especially Jess, because she was getting so flustered.
Yeah, I also do enjoy that Carrie basically lost the task to Jess because she misunderstood creams instead of just screaming.
Everything makes a big difference in this. Phil's up next, and he left all the tasks where...
it's Phil and Rod together.
I'll talk about Phil first. Phil, he didn't take the tasks with him on his adventure, so he just sort of like picked one up and left it where it was. He also struggled to find the book, and he screamed after 9 minutes and 55 seconds. Well, I say screamed in air quotation marks. It was just like a bap sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, in my notes, Phil has a terrible scream.
And Rod basically left the tasks all over the house, and he even strip searched Alex at one point. And there's a theme where Rod just loves... I know you mentioned Alex Horn has a might of a humiliation fetish. Could we be getting to the point where it's Alex is asking Rod to do all these weird things?
I don't know. I'm not certain. He could be. It also just could be that Rod is like... I'm certain these two play off of each other quite a lot.
Rod is a ward fella.
And then, actually, at this point, because as you said, Rod couldn't find the book, which I would like to mention, the book is actually hidden. There's the bookshelf on one wall of the main room of the Taskmaster House is fake, so it's just an image of books printed onto a hollow box, which is great, but there's one book that's actually real and that, like, you really don't notice at first.
It's the same thing with, like, the little drawers we've seen. I think the best task was the Free Alex task in Series 3, where there's a bunch of printed drawers, but one of them is, or one or two of them are real.
Yeah, and so, but anyways, Rod doesn't find the book, so he strip searches Alex, pulls down Alex's trousers to reveal that Alex's underwear is Hawaiian print. So we do have an actual Hawaiian print clothing there. And then when Alex, when this is commented on, when they go back to the studio, Alex pulls up his underwear a little bit so it's over his belt line, and they are pink with flamingos on them. I have a shirt in that exact pattern.
Well, if you're ever on Taskmaster, wear that shirt and then get Alex to pull his trousers down so you can see his pants, and then take a picture of your shirt with his pants.
That would be a very image.
You know, well, you've said it now, so you sort of have to do it.
Yeah, if I ever get on Taskmaster. And then, yeah. Oh, one other thing. And, so we mentioned that Phil had a terrible scream, right?
Yep.
Phil gets to redeem his terrible scream.
He rips his shirt off Bruce Banner style and just goes, I don't want to do it too loud.
Like, no, just, no, goes, just drop in, drop in the audio, the clip of him doing it.
All right.
Yeah, but but that's we, why
I really wanted to make my tattoo the image, but I for this episode. But since we're soundbiting it, we might have to include.
I was think that's what I wanted it to be because Phil, it looks great, and the best part is that's why I mentioned Phil's shirt having pop rivets because I thought he'd ripped the buttons off of his shirt, but because they're just riveted, he can just yank his shirt open.
yeah, like he's. Oh, Bruce Banner or Superman or something. Mm-hmm. But and as we remember, Rod, when he was stripped out to try and find the blue book, he finally screamed after 12 minutes and 51 seconds. James.
And Phil got 9:55.
Yeah, we mentioned that. James, fully aware of his surroundings, just literally bang, 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 everything went everywhere straight away, screamed in 3 minutes 48.
Yeah, oh my god, James was so good. James knew where everything was. He apparently had noticed the book in a previous task, so that's been there for... We'll have to look in previous episodes to see if that's in there somewhere, because he definitely noticed. He noticed that before they even started filming. And then some other notice things I noticed just for James is... if you go to exactly 24 minutes and 32 seconds in the video, there is like a second and a half long bit of James opening the door to get the task under the doormat. And if you look
up... What was the timestamp, sorry?
24:32. If you look at everything except the door opening, you'll notice that the door is being opened at a normal speed, but the sky is... And the trees blowing in the wind are all moving at time-lapse speed. And it's for like 2.5 seconds. I don't know.
I've just seen it. I've seen it. Why? That is such a weird editing choice.
It's such a good move, but because I love the artsy thing, but it's such a short thing. Nobody probably
maybe
noticed
it. Maybe it's a reflection of just how fast James was moving.
Maybe. They just do artsy shit on this show all the time. But one other thing I'd like to note when we're doing this is that when James pulls the book out of the fake bookshelf, his sunglasses come off, and his like green fake sunglasses come off, and he just catches them like so smoothly,
like Spider-Man.
Like he does just such a smooth catch. As he does that, it's great. That's the only other thing I wanted to mention.
Yeah, so the scores, as you can probably guess, it goes James, then Jess, Kerry, Phil, and Rod.
And there is an adapted task.
Okay.
There's just one, Basti Test, Season 4, Episode 1.
Any major differences?
Nope.
Okay. That's it. It's on to VT Task 3, and yes. AKA another very soundbite heavy task.
Yes, this one is very fun. So the task brief is: compose the best 30-second piece of music. You have 20 minutes. Your time starts now. And so the contestants all come in into the main room of the Taskmaster house, and they are met by a 3-piece band that looks like what would happen if Mumford and Son was from the dollar store. But they're surrounded by all the stereotypical hipster instruments, which is like a melodica, an acoustic guitar, some weird banjo, like cross between a banjo and a guitar, and a trombone or a trumpet. And it's a trumpet, and there's a triangle because Kerry uses the triangle. It's the most stereotypical hipster shit you can imagine. But anyways, these guys are. These guys have names. They're mentioned. I didn't write them down. I'm sure somebody else will know. But
Did I just hear a cat meowing in the background of yours?
That is, I have a window open because it's gorgeous outside and there is a bird in a tree that wants to fuck another bird.
It sounds like a cat.
I assure you it's a bird.
Oh, that reminds me of a funny clip I saw. It was two squirrels, one was humping the other. And then the one who was being humped... No, this is the funny part. The one that was being humped got out of the position and then ran around to hump the one that was originally humping it.
Glad to know that Emerson watches that on his free time. But, no. Dude, remember, we're not a kink-shaming podcast, Emerson. Anyways, the only real note from, like, the actual, like, writing of the song bit or any of the intro stuff is that James calls Alex not a musician. Like, he's like, shut up, you're not a musician, which you can hear a couple members of the crowd go, ooh, in the piped over crowd music, because they're the ones who know that Alex is in the horn section. Because that's just an okay jab if you don't know that what else Alex does. But anyways, so again, not many notes from the actual like production of the song bit. A lot of them know more about music than I would expect. Phil knows what a 12-note blues structure is, which I have no idea.
I remember being told something like that in GCC music, but that was a long time ago, man.
Rod wants something in E minor. My notes are just jam sessions just inherently look ridiculous. So there's not really much else to go with here. Then we actually get into the songs, which I would like to point out, in case anybody wants to email Carl at taskmaster.info, which is that the song names are given on his website, but the actual band names, because they all have band names, and they are not given. So
I knew they weren't from the horn section because I didn't recognize any of them.
No. Not the names of the dudes in the band. Each contestant, like, we are this group, and then here's our song. So Phil, his group is called Kill Phil, and the song is called Yellow Blues.
Which is great, because we've talked about how Phil looks like the bride.
Intentionally so, from Kill Bill down to the shoes. This song is called The Yellow Blues, which is
accidental rhyming.
Yeah, a 12-bar blues piece. Phil plays the trumpet.
Although there was some weird color-changing effect in this.
So the whole thing is set in black and white. Phil's yellow jumpsuit is made yellow, but you have to remember the song is called The Yellow Blues. They were doing a selective coloring thing, so yellow. And then what is yellow plus blue?
Green.
That is what color they turned it at the end of the thing.
When
he did his blues note, because the yellow man is playing the blues, he turned green.
That is, I would never have jumped to that conclusion, honestly.
Whoever is doing the editing for this show had a lot more time on their hands than normal, I feel. And so they made a lot of very good, very subtle things.
Did we drop the soundbite in for this?
We can right now.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay, who's next, Joe?
Up next is Carrie Gondelman, whose band is called Hokey Cokey Good Times.
These
my band Hokey Cokey Good Times, and it's called Having a Great Time Anytime. One, two, three, four.
Also, I also would just like to point out that each of these bands also got a title card with their individual on the screen of like all their different their band name and their song name, and each of them has their own little individual font. It's really cool. It's really cool. If you're watching this, go back and look at each of those and just sort of see those like blink and you'll miss it visual things. But the Hokey Cokey Good Times are singing Having a Great Time Anytime, and it's a
I like piece that of, song title
and it's a piece of music that vaguely resembles a folk song. I'll be honest, I'm not quite knowledgeable enough on a lot of this style of music that they did for this to have gotten any of that. Like, I'm much more of a contemporary genre stuff, so like rock and roll, disco, that sort of thing. Up next, we've got probably the most memorable song out of this, which is Clump Stump singing Over My Shoulder, which is James Acaster's group.
With Clump Stump, and this song is called Over My Shoulder. Over my shoulder, older and older, that's what I told ya. Over my shoulder, I'm getting colder, is that a boulder? Over my shoulder, older and older, that's what I told ya!
This would probably be the B-side to Pants on a Stick or something.
Yeah, and I believe I mentioned this at some point in the past. I did mention this at some point in the past. I can't remember which episode it was. Someone commented that there's some kind of, on Reddit, that there's some kind of link between all the way back in season one, Frank Skinner taking a boulder on the train.
Oh, yeah, I mentioned that.
Acaster, yeah, and then James Acaster's song, which is at one point he sings, is that a boulder or just a big rock? So, you know, I feel like I need to mention that just here to close that sort of, to put a pin in that.
I think it was an accident.
I'm sure it was, but I was thinking about it as I was watching this, because James Acaster, you know,
Taskmaster likes to do throwbacks to certain things.
Yeah, but and Acaster was mentioning in the previous task that he was a big fan of the show when they were saying how he like knew his way around the house. I'm just like, he probably is the kind of person who would remember that and like, you know, think about that or something. But in any event, and they've certainly done enough tasks with a boulder on this show for that to come up. But, then and also James is playing the banjo, but that's not in the correct thing. He's drumming on the banjo, on the face of the banjo with drumsticks, which is very interesting.
I mean, it doesn't make an awful noise.
Oh no, I'm not saying that it's wrong. I'm just like playing the on Taskmaster.info it says playing the banjo, which implies that James is strumming it and not using it as a percussion instrument. I wanted to clear that up because I thought it was funny that he did that.
Fair
and
enough.
Then next up we have Jessica Knappett, whose band is the Easy Triangles, and they are playing Here I Am, I'm a Violin, which is a jig-type song that involves her playing the triangle at various points while the other guys play like violin and the guitar and the melodica. She really liked the melodica.
Hi, we're the Easy Triangles, and this is our new hit single, Here I Am, I'm a Violin.
Thank you.
And it's easily the most danceable song in this one, which is shown when Alex is forced to dance to it in the studio.
With and he's got Ray baby yanking, reins
on. And with yanking on the ropes that are coming out of his jacket. It's absurd, and it's great. Finally, we have Rod, whose band is called The Little Match Girls, and he made a piece of a musical called The Ballad of the Toothless Goon.
This is The Ballad of the Toothless Goon, performed by The Little Match Girls. Eastern Europe, we join our toothless goon in an unassuming house on an unassuming street where he sits by an unlit fire. He snores deeply, fast asleep despite his cold and stony hearth. But wait, what's this? A knock at the door. And a little match girl selling her wares. But she can't get the toothless goon's attention, so deeply does he sleep. She shakes her matches and bangs the door, and in her desperation, she decides to knock on the window and shout.
Hi! Toothless goon!
Shouts of toothless goon. The goon sleeps so deeply, our little match girl decides to come round the back of the house and put the window through. But still, our goon, he sleeps. Deeply and loudly. He dreams of teeth in days gone by and a lit hearth. Our little match girl approaches with her matches and rests her hand upon his slumbering shoulder. Whereupon our goo wakes up with a startle. Yeah! Whizzes round and shoots her shitting face off.
Which, I don't know what the hell a little match girl is, but if we haven't played the soundbite, we're going to play it right now. And the only thing I have to say is... I actually happen to have a box of matches in my... Why do I have a box of matches in my room? Whatever it is, I have a box of matches right here, so hopefully the mic is picking up the fact that I'm shaking them. But, anyways, that is it for the songs. I'm going to be real. I didn't... What's the best way to put this? None of these songs are my preferred genre, and I'm not really, you know, that into any of them. So in the interest of not just going into a technical breakdown of each song, because, you know, it's produced in 20 minutes, and, you know, I'm just going to defer to Greg's judgment, because, you know, I'd rather not just savage all of these for no reason. None of them suck. Let's put it that way. I don't think any of them suck, but I also am not well versed in liking these particular kinds of songs to give an opinion. Does that make sense, Emerson?
Just about. Okay.
Oh, and there's one thing I'd like to mention right now before we go into the live task, which is that the commercial breaks for this episode are taking place on, like, the outside of a building with a multi-level staircase. I think this might be the place where they did the quick change task, that community center just like out back. And if we have not seen this staircase, but it did show up in Taskmaster, because there is an unaired task that takes place on this staircase, which is write two lines for a poem about the Taskmaster, which was shown in the studio for episode 6, but was not aired. So,
okay.
When they did that one, that was like a collaborative poetry thing that that all five of the contestants were there for. And there's a picture on taskmaster.info, the source of all knowledge on this show, of them all standing on this staircase. And I thought that was very interesting, because, you know, a lot of times they won't have the commercial breaks be from, like, any specific task set. And so that it being closely tied to what should have been an aired task but wasn't, is very interesting.
Fair enough. Sorry, I'm in a period where I'm getting distracted.
That's fine. It is now up.
It's getting quite late.
Well, then let's wrap this up and talk about the last task of this episode, because there isn't an adapted task for this one or for the last one. This is probably one of the more original shows we've had in a while.
This one's a little. I mean, it's. I wrote down like the basis of the task, but I didn't write down the names. Greg said.
I did. When we get to that.
The live task. Bob, when you hear the surname of a famous Bob. Pat, when you hear the surname of a famous Pat. Neil, when you hear the surname of a famous Neil. Stu, when you hear the surname of a famous Stu. Wayne, when you hear the surname of a famous Wayne. If you do an incorrect action or fail to do any action within 10 seconds of hearing the name, you are disqualified. Last person correctly bobbing, patting, kneeling, stewing, or waning wins.
And just so that we're clear, the bobbing, patting, and kneeling are self-evident. Stewing is making a motion with your hand that looks like you're stirring a stew. And waning is like shrinking down towards the ground while holding your arms together, kind of looking like a waning crescent moon. This was a long shot in terms of like the stewing and the waning motions are bullshit, but they had to go with that.
Okay.
Maybe Discord's telling you to go to sleep, Emerson. Let's finish this up quickly.
All right. Oh boy. Oh God. I wish I had more to talk about in these things, but I don't like making notes.
You gotta make James notes, was a, man.
So when James was eliminated first, then Phil, then Kerry, then Jess, and Rod was the last one standing, which means Rod wins the episode.
And I do have all the names, just in case we want them. First one was Bob Marley, which nobody was eliminated. Then Neil Armstrong. James was eliminated because he thought it was Lance Armstrong. Wayne Sleep, I think, is who it was that got Phil eliminated. Kerry got eliminated by Wayne Gretzky because she thought it was Pat. And then Bob Holness got Jess eliminated because Jess thought that was the first name was Stu. Wayne Sleep and Bob Holness really confused me because Greg didn't enunciate them properly, and Phil got really confused by whoever the hell Wayne Sleep is. I have no idea who that and Bob Holness are.
Okay. Cool.
That's it.
Okay. Bye.
Right.
No, wait, it's not bye. No, I don't know. I'm tired, man. I've had a tattoo today. My body is...
Oh, you had this today? Jesus Christ. Okay, I thought you meant like over the weekend or something. Just so that we can finish up so that you can go to bed. Rod Gilbert won the live task, and that pushed him over the edge to win the episode. He goes up to the stage. He pulls the creepy shirt off the mannequin, decapitating it in the process, and that's it. That's it. End of episode. Okay. I'm sorry. I did not realize that you had gotten the tattoo today, Emerson. I'm sorry.
Okay. Bye, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Goodbye.
Bye.